Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
I came away from this training feeling very competent that what I know and what I do is going to be enough and that I don't need to always be afraid of saying the right thing in the right moment. If we're doing a life review, it's not up to me to come up with answers for this person. That's their journey, that's their path, and that I can ask questions to help them think about it in a more deep way. But I don't have to fix anything for anyone, which was such a relief.
Hey everyone, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and Wellness Renaissance Podcast. That was Lori Chapman. And if you're in Duluth, Minnesota, you may recognize her. She used to live here in Duluth and was a naturopath when she was here. Currently, she is working in the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill triangle in North Carolina as an end-of-life doula. And she was just talking, that was a couple different snippets from the interview, she was talking about her training and going through the process of becoming an end-of-life doula. And if you've been listening, you know that episode 57, we talked to Shelby Carillon, who is also an end-of-life doula. And I wanted the opportunity to have Lori share her story. She was the first person that I talked to and had been connected up with and wanted to share her perspective of being a very new end-of-life doula and having recently gone through the training and talking about what a person might need to bring to the table to do this. So if you've listened to, you've heard about the end-of-life doula or you listened to Shelby and you want to know a little bit more and continue the conversation, I got a lot of really good feedback and some folks who were really excited to hear more. So we're taking the conversation forward and exploring it from a different perspective. I mentioned this last week, and I will put the information again at the end of this episode. Really excited to be co-hosting with Sarah Seidelman, the Death Cafe here in Duluth on January 24th at the Zeitgeist Cafe. I have had some amazing conversations. People who are coming, really excited to come, and also people who were involved in the Duluth Superior Death Cafe a few years ago. So really excited to be bringing this forward. And I invite anybody who was at the Duluth Superior events to check us out on Facebook and sign up. Come on down. We'd love to see you. The details, again, I will put those after my discussion with Lori. And just quickly before we dive into the conversation with Lori, I want to take a moment and thank you so much for all of you who have supported the podcast, commented on Facebook, left comments on the actual webpage at the wellnessrenpodcast.com page. And thank you, of course, to all of the supporters who have shared the information, shared the podcast, supported us through our Amazon affiliate link, and also, of course, to those Patreon subscribers. It really does mean a lot to me to have you support my work and get this information out to people. And for those of you who have considered supporting, you know, think about it this way. It's as low as a buck a month. So a buck a month, four episodes a month, typically that we're doing, which is what, 25 cents an episode. So it's kind of like busker's change. And honestly, it is really not my favorite thing. And it is really hard for me to throw myself out there and ask for the support, especially the financial support. But the reality is, you know, it's not free to do this as much as a lot of the build your business, you can have a podcast out by this afternoon. Things make it sound like it's cheap or completely free. The reality is there are costs involved for us to put this together. So as much as I hate to put it out there and say, hey, please support the podcast, it is to pay the bills of server space and web domains and various other incurred costs that you can probably imagine. And if you're a listener of this podcast or you know me, you know that this is something that I want to continue doing forever, if possible, to be able to connect with people, get their stories told and share their information to help share the people and the work so that we can all benefit. So I humbly ask for your support. And I know I normally throw this on the back end, But I've had a few people suggest that I throw it on the front end to help make sure that people do hear it and create some understanding that the work that we're doing is work. It is absolutely joyous work, but it is nonetheless many hours and solid effort to create this for all of us, really. So thank you for letting me take a few moments to throw myself out there and be a little brave in the aspect of this work that is probably the hardest aspect for me to do. So I appreciate your time and your attention and your support. I really, really do. Okay, on that note, let's head on into my conversation with Lori. Thank you so much for your time, Lori. We and I have had a couple of really cool conversations, and I'm excited to talk to you and share your perspective.
Thanks. I'm excited too.
We talked to Shelby, and thank you so much for connecting me up with her.
You're welcome.
I'm excited to hear from you, where you are just in the beginning process of doing all of this. And how long ago was your training?
My training was in August.
Okay, so nice.
Pretty new.
Yes. Talk about what brought you to being an end-of-life doula and just kind of your path. What does this all mean to you and what helped you move to this place?
Okay. So I have kind of a varied background, but I have a degree in social work. So I've done some social work, and then I went to school to become a naturopathic physician, and I was in Duluth for a little while. Mm-hmm. And when I was in school, I was a CNA, which is a certified nursing assistant, and I did that kind of as a side job when I was in school. And I was sent to a couple of hospice cases, and I really enjoyed working with those people who were dying. And then I didn't really think about it too much after that, although I've been interested in death without really realizing I was interested in death for a while. And when I moved here to North Carolina, I am doing some more of that same work. And I was hanging out with a little older woman this spring, and she ended up being put into hospice. And she died. And I was talking to a friend of mine shortly thereafter about how much I really like to do hospice work. And I need to volunteer for hospice. I need to, you know, do something with hospice so that I can have more experience with people who are dying. And a couple days later, my friend called me and said, you know, I just heard about this thing called end-of-life doula. Do you think you might be interested in that? Well, I know what a birth doula is. So, you know, instantly I knew what she was talking about, and I got goosebumps, and I said, yeah, really, I would be really interested. And it turns out there was a training in Raleigh just like a month later that I signed up for. So I did the training, and now I'm trying to start my own business here in the Triangle area of Raleigh and Durham, North Carolina. So that's kind of how I got here.
Nice. I want to circle back to one of the things you said, just because I know in conversations, people either get this or they are kind of like, okay, that's creepy. The whole statement of like the concept of being interested in death. Like I found myself in this weird process of, and nothing did I understand about this until I took like death education classes and things like that, where I started to realize that this really fascinates me and interests me in a way that I cannot explain. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked with my mother-in-law while she was dying, and I weirdly enjoyed that process, and I felt like somehow strange or wrong about it. And I love that I'm talking to people in the last few years who kind of normalized that a little bit.
Yeah.
It feels so weird. But yeah. Do you have any insights to that that might help people kind of get it?
Well, I think in our culture, you know, that death is something that we don't talk about. And it hasn't always been that way. You know, people used to die at home. Grandma was dying in the back room, and her kids and her grandkids were all there because they all lived in the same house. And in our society now, death has become very medicalized. In fact, there's a really good book out there called Be Mortal by Atul Gawande about the disservice we're doing to our elderly people by putting them in nursing homes and hospitals where they die. And the majority of people want to die at home. And that's not really what's happening. So I feel like as an end-of-life doula, like I get to be a part of this whole movement to help normalize death, to bring it back into conversation. You know, it's something that we're all going to experience. So why not talk about it? Did that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think it's the shift of being able to see the beauty in it. And
right. It's very, there's something very sacred about being able to sit at someone's bedside while they're dying. And I'm so grateful that I heard about this. That I really want to be a part of that for people.
And I think of a person, like I've never, so many times when we see the representation of death on TV or whatever, there's this trauma. I've known people, you know, somebody goes, I mean, granted, when you have a medical emergency, right? It's a medical emergency.
Right.
So there's sort of that disconnect that some people have. You never get to see the person again or whatever the case is. And those are definitely situations that can't be helped. Although I think this discussion opens up sometimes those opportunities where they can be helped. I mean, not that you know when you're going to die and how you're going to die, but I think sometimes being able to be allowed to talk about that or to say no to something, maybe a treatment.
Now that you have a choice.
Right. It puts a whole different piece in it. And you can, I don't know, I feel excited that you and people are doing the end of life doula work, because I think of what I want for my own self. And I want that. There's a comfort in that, that I think can be so great for people. And then the work that you're doing opens up the bigger, broader conversation. It helps people get more comfortable. And then we can have those conversations and having that peace. If somebody does have a medical event, but maybe having had some of those conversations, some of those words be spoken, even just throughout our conversation, it seems to me like it could alleviate just so much loss and stress and feeling like you didn't get to connect with that person because, you know, not that you don't want to live, spend your life living, but this is part of living.
Right. And for all of us, whether we want to talk about it or not, it will happen. Right. So let's get to that point with some peace around it. And the only way that's going to happen is to talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So yay.
Yeah.
I want to, well, let's start here.
Okay.
The training that you did, let's just talk about the training. What does it look like? How long is it? What are you doing in that training to help you prepare for this?
Sure. So I was trained by a group called the International End of Life Doula Association, or INELDA. There are a lot of organizations, I think, out there that are training people now. And the training was partly online. We had to do a big piece of it online before the actual weekend training. So then it was, I think it was 6 or 8 hours on Friday, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday. So it doesn't actually sound like a lot, but it was very intense. I mean, it was a really intense training. And a lot of what we did is role play. Also, a lot of what we did was talk about our own comfort level, our own issues around death. And some of that was through role play. It was a big group. I guess there were 59 or 67 people. So we ended up just breaking into smaller groups or just one-on-one doing the role play. And I don't know what else to tell you about that. I had no experience with this at all. So all of it was new to me. Mm-hmm. Although I think that because of my social work background and my medical background, like I have the ability to really listen to people. And that was really stressed during this training about how so much of what we do is just to listen. Henry, who is the executive director of INELDA, talks about it as deep listening. So we talked quite a bit about that in the training. And the two trainers, both are nurses. One of them is an actual end-of-life doula. The other is a hospice nurse. And they were amazing. They were amazing. I think it was a great training. So
I'm guessing that your work with your previous, you know, people that you work with who going through hospice and having those experiences just open the doors for you. And probably just even with the social work and the naturopathic, even just the language, like, even though that's not what you're trained in, but I'm guessing that that kind of helped carry you forward.
Sure. And that it was about being a caregiver.
Right. You know? Exactly. And even just the talking about hard things and that kind of stuff opens the door to that too. So
yes. Learning how to ask the right questions and learning how to listen, how to be present for someone.
So thinking about somebody's listening to this and going, okay, I'm intrigued. What does it mean to do this work? What does it mean for our lives? And you've definitely talked about kind of the skill set of listening and those kinds of things. But what else would one need to kind of think about as you're doing this? What does it look like to work with a client? You've got, I'm sure, short-term people and long-term people that you might work with.
I think you need to be the sort of person who can actually stay a little disconnected. And I consider myself a caregiver. I think I have a very caring personality. And I think for me, it's going to be learning how to be present with people who are dying without taking on that fear and the sadness that's going on around me. Like being that person who can hold space for whatever's going on around me with other people. And I don't know if that's going to be a challenge or not, but it will be interesting. Just being able to let go of my own stuff, my own emotions, so that I can really, really be present for other people.
And I'm also thinking about even like logistics.
It's kind of, you know, it's a kind of job where you have to, because you don't know when you're hired, how long this person has. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to get have a cup of coffee with a colleague, and she couldn't get together. She had to cancel because the first person that she ever was a end of life doula for was actively dying, and she had been with her for 18 months. So you can't predict, like, okay, do I want to take this client on because Christmas is right around the corner? Like that kind of logistics, it's so very unpredictable, and you have to be able to go with the flow, I think. But also, when I trained, because there was such a large group, there's several other women who were in my group, and we've been getting together and having dinner once a month and getting to know each other, and we've formed a group so that when we are actually sitting vigil and somebody has hired us to be there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I have colleagues that I can rely on. If I've been there for 12 hours and I need a break, I can call somebody and say, you know, can you come and sit for a while so that I can go take a nap? So that logistically will help all of us to do our job better.
Right. What do people do in situations where that isn't an option or there isn't another doula around? Is it you just do the stick it out and break where you can or get a hold of another family member? How does that work?
I think so. Shelby, who was one of the trainers, and she was alone for a while in her town. She has a coworker now, but I think what she did is she trained the family to know how to be present and to look for the signs of when a person is getting ready to die. And then she would be in and out. And I think that if I were here by myself, that's what I would do, to be available as much as I can, but also to train, be able to train the family to know what they're looking for and how to be present for someone.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of it's a little situational too.
Yeah. But again, and I feel so grateful for these other women. Like, here I have my own business. And when we get together, we've even talked about fees so that we don't undercut each other. And if somebody's going to come and sit with me, you know, what's that going to look like? Who's going to be available? I probably would need to know that ahead of time. Mm-hmm. It's just nice to connect with a group of women who we're all on the same page.
And to sort of, I mean, again, to be doing this, I think of how doctors used to be when there weren't many doctors around, and when, well, you know, if somebody's having a baby in the middle of Thanksgiving dinner, you go deliver the baby in the middle of Thanksgiving dinner. There's no backup, right?
That's right.
So being willing and able to let those things go for your clients and to be present with them.
Right. Yeah. Death, you know, can't predict when a baby's going to be born. You can't predict when someone's going to die.
Exactly. One of the questions that pops up for me is, was there And I know that you haven't actually had a client at,
right.
Okay. I mean, you're brand new at this, so makes sense. Was there anything that's come up for you? And I would say maybe not only extend this thought to training, but to any of the books you've read and things like that. Anything pop up for you that really surprised you about the aspects of working with people and death and dying, or even just some points that you see as kind of highlights from how to do this better for all of us, how to get these conversations started, how to think about things so we can open up our mind to it and communicate with our family?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for me, a big fear that I've always had is like knowing when to say the right thing. I think that I came away from this training feeling very competent, that what I know and what I do is going to be enough, and that I don't need to always be afraid of saying the right thing in the right moment or fixing things. You know, as a social worker and as a naturopathic doctor, that's kind of part of it, is fixing things. I'm not really sure that that's exactly right, but I have more of a role in that than I do as an end-of-life doula. Like, I learned, which kind of surprised me, was that it's not up to me, like if we're doing a life review, it's not up to me to come up with answers for this person. That's their journey, that's their path, and that I can ask questions to help them think about it in a more deep way, but I don't have to fix anything for anyone, which was such a relief. Henry, in the training, you know, Henry, although he wasn't there, he is an end-of-life doula, and he makes it pretty clear that we are there for the person who's dying. And, you know, even though we are there also for the friends and family, our main focus is on the person who's dying. I don't need to be a bereavement counselor for the family. I need to focus on what the person needs, the person that's dying, what they need. So that was a surprise and a relief that I realized about halfway through the training. Because, you know, when I went into it, I was scared. Like, can I do this? Really? Can I? Not do I want to, because I knew I wanted to, but I was worried about, can I really do this? Can I be that present for someone? And I came away from the training feeling like I really can.
That's an interesting point. I mean, just the, you don't have to be everything to everyone.
Right.
You need to be as much as you can be to the person who is dying and will be and can be a great support to everybody else too. Like you said, I can see that your main focus, where that goes and taking that load off.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Yeah. That's one of the things that I hadn't thought of, but I think that I would have thought of is the whole aspect of all of those people. And then, like you say, saying the right thing at the right time.
Oh yeah. Well, that was something else that I didn't mention that I learned, is that, boy, silence is really powerful during this process, and it is okay to be silent. Like, I don't have to fill every silence with words. I can just sit in the silence with a dying person, and that's a relief too.
Right. And that may well be exactly what they want.
Exactly.
You know,
Right.
I can think of a surgery that I had where, you know, I realize this is different, but it's still the place of being in discomfort and being all of that. And yeah, I just wanted the person with me. I didn't want to talk at all.
Yeah.
But I absolutely wanted that other person there and know that they were physically reachable.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I think though, the little things that you're talking about are big things, and they might be for somebody who's thinking about, hey, this sounds intriguing, but ooh, that's a lot of responsibility in a sense, that it is, and it is, and it isn't, maybe. I mean, it definitely is, but you don't have to have the weight there. So I think that's
right. You can let go of some of it. Both the trainers, Nicole and Shelby, talked about holding space. And in my mind, and I think what they meant by that is like that I get to be the safe person who holds space, who is there for the person who's dying or friends and family. If they're angry, I'm a safe person to be in the room when they're angry, because I'm not going to judge their anger. Or if they're sobbing, then they're sobbing. And I can hold space for that. I don't have to judge anything. I don't have to say anything. I'm just there to witness the emotions that they're feeling.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Would that be your description of, or the definition of holding space?
That would be my definition of holding space. It's what I think of when somebody talks about holding space. Because I'm not, you know, when you're holding space, you're not talking very much. You're holding space for somebody else to be in their emotional space, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. I just was thinking it might be worth kind of really pulling that out a little bit, because I know I've heard people occasionally, like, what are they saying? You know, somebody will say that and they're not quite sure. Well, I don't even know what that quite looks like. So that's a great description. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's about me not judging where they're at emotionally.
And it's nice to have that person around. I mean, you know, for the grieving in some ways, it's weird to have an outsider there in some ways, but if you know their place and you know their role,
right.
And to not always have somebody trying to comfort you at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That just lets you be, because.
Right. And somebody who's not afraid to talk about dying.
Exactly. Yes. And that is so huge and important. And and I know Shelby had mentioned, and I don't recall if this was on the podcast or not, but she had mentioned just the whole concept of bringing in the word. I think it was Shelby. bringing in the word dying, you know, and, or was that you?
It might have been me, but it probably was Shelby. It's like, you know, in this culture, we have euphemisms for death, you know, they've passed away. We've put our animal to sleep. We don't say they died. Oh, it was me. It was me because I had run into a woman who was complaining about that. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. And yeah, using the word, wanting it to be a softer thing, which.
Right.
It is interesting, and I kind of get that, but I tell you, boy, if we can let some of those pieces go and just have the conversation and not be afraid of the dying word, when that isn't the thing that freaks people out, we can have a greater conversation about this, and everybody wins. So
yeah. We have so much fear around the unknown, and you know, death obviously is the big unknown, but it's death and people die. So let's use those words.
Right. Yeah. It is an interesting thing. We don't know how to communicate because we don't want to upset people.
Right.
I was doing an event in a nursing home this weekend, actually. Oh. And there was discussion about songs being played and what the content of the song was about. And well, do we want to do this because it's about death and dying, and do we want to remind people of that? And you know what I mean? And it's so hard to try to balance all of that and figure out, well, you know, not where, so where are the lines around this, right?
Right. It's so interesting because people in nursing homes, I mean, they're surrounded by death. And yeah, I don't know. We just kind of tiptoe around it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, you want to be respectful, but you want to leave that door open for discussion too. And I know I've been in places where, again, where when somebody realizes that you're okay to talk about something, death, dying, their own thought process, oh my gosh, they unleash so much because all of a sudden they're like, okay, you're not going to judge me for these weird thoughts I'm having. Right. Let's talk about this.
Right. Let's have a good conversation.
Yes.
You know, I think it was Shelby or maybe it was Nicole, one of the trainers, was talking about going into somebody's house and the daughter says, you know, when you go in and talk to my dad, the one that's dying, we're not really talking about that he's dying because I'm not sure that he knows that. And then she would go into dad's room and he'd be like, I don't want you to tell my daughter that I'm dying. You know, I was like, they can't talk to each other about it. So,
right.
You know, luckily whoever that end of life doula was hired so that she can make this all more normal and easy to talk about.
Right. And bring them together. And how beautiful. Right. I mean, who knows what happened in that situation, but I can imagine that the conversation could be just so much. Okay. He knows, you guys know, everybody knows each other. Let's do this. And let's,
it's not the big secret anymore.
Right. It's not, everybody knows you've been hiding cigarettes and smoking. Let's just talk about it.
You know, I remember when my my paternal grandfather died. I don't know how old I was, 3, 4, 5, somewhere in there. And nobody would tell me what was wrong. Nobody would tell me. And I remember asking and asking and just being kind of shoved out of the way. And compared to children who visited grandma at the bedside, you know, in the early 1900s, things have changed so much. And there's no point, as I think, there's no point in keeping it a secret.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing, bringing kids into the mix, because that is something that people still kind of really struggle with. Yeah. And I know I've heard some great stories about adults trying to protect their kid and their right. kid like coming back with this sort of almost so beyond their years philosophical discussion about, well, right. the dog died and the fish died, and then, you know, and just say, and they're like, okay, they're handling this better than I am. All right, right. I guess we
can. Right. Right. Either that or they're instilling this fear around it. You know, it's yes. it's kind of one extreme or the other. And I don't know.
I don't know, you know, if kids, I know I've heard some people I don't want to talk about because they're afraid of death. And it's the sadness of, say, you know, losing your pet, the dog's gone off to the other farm to have a happy life versus telling them they're gone. I don't. And
why are they afraid?
Well, you know, that's, yeah.
That's my question, talking to my grandchild or whatever. Why? Right. You know, why? Can you tell me why you're afraid? Let's talk about it.
Right. And I think sometimes you're right. I think that as a child, and I could think of this from my own experience, I take on the fear of the other person because I don't, mm-hmm. I know they're not being straight with me.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know that as a kid, you know right. they're not telling you the whole story, and it feels more uncomfortable. And I think sometimes we do more damage in not telling our kids
I agree.
The truth yeah. and helping them understand it. And then they find out later and you're like, well, if you lied to me about that and you lied to me about that, what else, right. you know, what else right. didn't you tell me about?
Right. But also, you know, it's like, you can't avoid death.
Right.
You know, they're going to experience death throughout their life. And so why talk about it in a fearful way when it's something that's all around us and right. have to deal with it eventually.
Right. And it also lets them, you know, I mean, some kids are amazing at processing stuff, and for them to be able to have been able to understand what grandpa is going through and that what's happening. So they get to sort of emote properly and they get to speak their,
they get to have their grief.
Right. It's not taken away from them to go, wait a minute, right. I never get to see that person again, you know, right. or I know religious beliefs are the afterlife and some of those things, but dealing with the here and the now and what's mm-hmm. going on and allowing them to, like you say, have their last moments the best that they can.
Yeah.
It's at yeah. least in the best timing that they can do it, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a, I hadn't thought about that, but that is such a huge thing that so many parents are end up dealing with of how do we even talk about this?
Because they don't know how either.
So, right, exactly.
You know, how would they talk to their children? Because they're afraid themselves. So,
right.
You know, I think that our death culture just needs to grow up, basically.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I certainly understand it when you have kids, what is the language you use and how do you do this and how do you help them understand it in a way that is not, it might be fearful for a few minutes, but in trying the process of understanding it, but boy, the process of going through that and being able to, in a sense, make friends with that in their mm-hmm. mind as they're growing up.
That makes me wonder if there's any books out there for children. I'm going to have to investigate that.
Just thinking about that, of their, yeah, what is out there? I'm sure somebody has had to have written something to help
I'm sure.
talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to put that on my list of things to do.
Right. It's a good point. It's a hard thing. But man, mm-hmm. how great is it to be able to bring somebody else in and maybe have them have the tools to help the whole family talk and for kids to get to see
right.
this in action and the comfort, as much as it's sad and painful and there is emotion and anger, but also some sort of comfort and peace and
yeah.
transparency around it.
That's a good word. Yeah.
What a great thing as a kid.
What a blessing.
To grow up with that sort of emotional maturity and cushion and experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very curious around
we
that.
Change yeah. things.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. We as adults need to be able to talk about it and have those words for ourselves. So when we get caught off guard and need to talk about it with our kids, we might stumble and fumble, but we've got more tools in the toolbox to try to work through,
right?
If not the perfect language. So thinking about talking about this in your sort of getting the word out about yourself and telling people what you do, how is that? Like, how are you experiencing that? How are you doing this? And what are those conversations like for you?
Well, so far it's been pretty easy. It's kind of, I enjoy talking about it for starters, and people are not put off by it usually. I mean, I have a couple of people who have asked me how that's going, but they don't really want to know. But it doesn't hurt my feelings or put me off, because there are so many people. Like, we had our neighbor over for dinner one night. We're sitting out on the patio, and I was telling her that I was doing this new thing and I had just done this training, and she was instantly like, oh my gosh, I need to hook you up with so-and-so. I think the majority of people that I talk to kind of get what it is, especially if people have heard the doula word before in association with birth. So, well, the other thing is that I have been going to death cafes, and there was a death expo, and I've been around a lot of people lately who talk about death and aren't afraid to talk about death. So I've gotten more comfortable talking about death. I'm actually this week going to go to a networking event. It's all women. It's one of those, it's not a, you know, business networking international, but it is a networking for your business. And I'm going to talk to people, and I can assure you that only one other person in that group probably has heard about end-of-life doulas. So we'll see how that goes. You know, I don't know. I think the more comfortable I am talking about it, the more people respond to me with comfort. It doesn't freak them out.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so far it's been good. It's been way easier for me to talk about this than about naturopathic medicine, I think, because death is inevitable, and a lot of people aren't on board with alternative sort of medical stuff. So, you know, it's just been easier in that regard.
That is a wild thing. I mean, I think that is just a wild, I get it. Like, it doesn't totally surprise me. I just think, wow, how fascinating is that? What does that say about our world and our culture?
Yeah.
And at the same time, we have a really complex relationship with talking about death. So,
yeah. Well, and it's been interesting for me, because I think of myself as an introvert, kind of a social introvert. I like to be around people, but they exhaust me in general. But being in a group of people, like this kind of networking thing, is like not really my idea of fun. But I have chosen these professions, first of all, naturopathic doctor, and now end-of-life doula, that people have not heard about. And I have to talk about it. It's part of when you're doing something that other people don't know what it is, you have to educate them. So here I am, an introvert in these two way out there professions. And I don't know why I chose that, because I'm scared to talk in groups, and I'm having to do it. So it's good growth for me too, I guess.
It's interesting. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing. I'm thinking it's almost sometimes easier, and I don't know if this is true for you, and I'm wondering this as I'm saying this, it's sometimes easier as an introvert, because I'm kind of an extroverted introvert. It's almost easier when something you're doing is so off the norm that somebody asks you and you can talk about it, and then they kind of help draw you out, and you don't always have to push yourself in.
Well, that's true.
What is this?
Right.
And if they look at you with fright and fear, then, you know, but
yeah.
I'm wondering, hearing you talk about this, and I know my own experiences talking with people when I was like in my death ed class and stuff, that there are a lot of people who really do want to talk about this, and they just don't have an outlet for it.
Yeah. These death cafes that I've been going to, there are people that attend and they just call themselves deathlings. And they're just people that want to talk about death, and there's like, this is a safe place to talk about death. So I don't know. I think that keeping people who are dying in the hospital, or, you know, they're dying away from our eyes, the secretiveness of it, or the we can't talk about it sort of aura around it, makes people even more curious. There's a lot of people that want to talk about it. And I'm glad to be part of this profession that's making it easier to talk about.
I would love to see more doctors go through some aspect of that training or something. I know again, when I was in my death ed class, it was mentioned of the fact that it needed to be in the medical school. And I talked to a few people who were going to medical school who said, oh my gosh, we don't deal with this at all. Yeah. This is yeah. not something we talk about. I have no idea. And hearing stories about people where the doctor will not talk about death as an option, like yeah. just only the medical interventions, because they don't want to mention that word or mention the fact that, well, if you don't do anything,
right.
this is what will happen. Right. And they just don't know how to handle it either.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another book out there that I read, and can't remember the author's name or the name of the book, but it was written by a neurosurgeon who in his fourth year of residency was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer or something. And his life dealing with the medical system as a doctor. And before he finished the book, he dies. His wife wrote the epilogue. But I think we need more books like that for the medical profession. And it would be so amazing if they had end of life training, just to be able to have some compassion and know how to talk to people who are dying.
Right.
That because of the way our medical system is, we are get people in, get people out. We don't feel that our doctors know who we are. And when you get the diagnosis of a terminal illness, and to feel like your doctor doesn't know you or doesn't want to talk to you about it, it's damaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, your options to talk about all of the range of things to do and how to deal with that emotionally are stunted.
Yeah.
And I've heard of a few people talking about the fact that they were dealing with a parent who was dying, and they felt like they were protecting the doctor's feelings all the time to make sure that they weren't talking about.
Here you are having to deal with your parent's death, and then you're having to worry about if you're offending your doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know what you would say about this, but I'm thinking it almost that encouragement of when we are dealing with this situation with people who are dying inside the medical system, to try to bring the doctor to the reality of saying let's bring the word into the room, perhaps, and right. say, let's try to talk about this.
Right. And let's do it with a decent, compassionate bedside manner,
right.
not just, you're dying, go home and get your affairs in order. You know, let's really just talk about this.
Right.
I don't think that there's any training for them to do
no.
that.
No. Yeah. Every doctor should be issued the On Being Mortal book.
Atul Gawande, he's a pretty interesting man. There's another book that I read. The author is Kate Bowler. She has a Facebook page. She, what is it called? It's called Everything's Going to Be Fine and Other Lies I've Loved. And you know, she's another very young woman who she actually teaches at the Duke Divinity School, and she was diagnosed with stage whatever cancer, and she's still alive. And the book is about continuing to, how do you, like, she's in this holding area where she's dying, but she hasn't died yet.
Ooh,
and uh-huh. how do you keep living until you die? And every book that I've read like that, they touch on the whole medical system and how that's worked for them. I can't remember her experiences so much, but there are a lot of books out there written by people who are dying or have died. Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. And thank goodness there's some resources. And
yeah.
The whole concept of bringing in end of life doulas as a more something that people see more. So good for you for going to like the networking thing and
doing some
of these things to just get the word out, because we need such a culture shift. We all will do better with it, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And it's above and beyond hospice. So, and I think hospice does a really good job, but it's not, they're not there the way that a doula can be there.
Right. It's a slightly different focus or, mm-hmm. yeah, process. Anything else that you have? I'm trying to think if I have any last questions.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, in my class I feel that I bring a lot of life experience to the table. I am not a youngster anymore, and I've had several professions and life experience, like I said, but I think anybody can do this. In the training that I took, there was a young woman who had just graduated from college and was going to be accepted into medical school. So she She was probably 22 or 23. And the oldest person was in her 70s or early 80s. I can't remember. So I don't think that there's an age sort of thing for becoming an end-of-life doula. I think it's about having compassion and being interested in death.
And like you say, being able to listen.
That's the biggest thing, I think, is being able to listen.
I can see that life experience can help, but it's not so much the life experience, but the experiences in your life that would help.
Right, yeah.
And open-minded. And like you say, the deep listening piece is huge.
It's huge. It's huge. Did I talk about, or did Shelby talk about that when people are dying, somebody did a study to talk about pain, and they discovered that only 50% of pain that a person feels at the end of their life is physical. Only 50%. And the other 50% is sort of spiritual pain, issues that haven't been resolved or regrets that you have. And I think that doulas are really trained to address that kind of pain. And hospice does the pain management, the other physical pain.
Right.
So
that right there, I think, is such a huge piece of why this is so important. And that puts like words to my thoughts that I hadn't fully formed yet.
Yeah.
To me, that's the relief that having an end-of-life doula around would bring, would be that exact concept and being able to be there and alleviate. And not only that, but you guys are working with helping mend or resolve.
Right. Part of it's about, I think one of the examples was used like, first of all, for the spiritual pain, I don't mean religious pain. Like I said, it's more of a kind of internal life pain about, I haven't talked to my brother for 20 years because we had a big fight and I feel horrible and I'm dying. And so as a doula, to be able to address that, like, is there something, do you think there's something that you can do to mend the fences, and what would that look like to you, and how can I help? And then also, if you choose to reach out and mend a fence and your brother doesn't want to mend a fence, then can we talk about how you might deal with that? Kind of help them work through all of that, whether the fence gets mended or not, how they're going to deal with that emotionally. And I think that's part of what I do, and a really important part.
Yeah, I would say, especially when you're talking 50%, right?
That's you know, we all have regrets. Maybe not all of us, but just sometimes feeling like you were a bad person or you didn't live the life that you wanted. And then at the end of your life, to have this going around and around in your mind and to be able to come to some sort of peace because you get to talk about it.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I think that is so, so huge.
Yeah.
And the loneliness that people feel, you know, and I think of people who have gone through really long illnesses and people have tried to be there for them, but
caregivers get burned out.
Right. And to have that person to come in and work through.
Yeah. To be there to give respite to the family that's exhausted. And I think it's part of, you know, some of the bereavement counseling that needs to be done after a death is guilt, because when people are ill for a very long time and caregivers get exhausted, I think for some people it gets to the point of, you know, would you just die already? You know, we're tired. And so then when the person dies, there's all this guilt because you have those thoughts. And like I said before, I am not a bereavement counselor, but I know a couple of good ones and I can make referrals.
Right. Well, and being able to say, hey, there is a bereavement counselor, like to be able to suggest that even.
Right. You know. I think you need to talk to somebody, and you know, what you were thinking during that time is completely normal, but I'm not the person to talk to about that. Right. So.
Wow. Well, thank you. This has been.
You're welcome. It's been really good for me.
Yeah.
I mean, really, to talk it through, and because I am so new at it, just to helps me formulate some ideas and know how to talk about it, learn how to talk about it. So thank you for reaching out to me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. And I think just having these conversations in the world it feels like a really important thing to do. Like, I don't even understand that about it, but I just feel like it's such an important thing to do. And I don't know if it's, like I say, as I think about my own stuff and I think about where I find peace and comfort, and I want that for everybody, maybe.
Yeah.
That having those conversations is so freeing for people. And I hear people who finally have, and they feel so grateful. I know people in my death education class, even just to talk about some of the stuff that we did, it felt like this weird weight was lifted off that you didn't even understand was right. Even body. So, yeah. So I think it's good to do this and keep these conversations going. So.
Yeah, I agree. Next time I'm in Duluth, I'll look you up. We can meet face to face and have a cup of coffee.
Yes, that's for sure. That would be fantastic. Do you want to share any contact information for you if people want to find
sure.
you in your area?
I am on Facebook, and so my Facebook page is Companions for a Peaceful Passage, and I have a website too, which is, you know, www.companionsforapeacefulpassage.com. So visit both of them.
Great.
And then the rest of my contact information is there.
Thank you.
Thanks, Judy.
This is really cool. I appreciate being so willing when you are so new. You know what I mean?
I'm just happy to talk about it.
Again, Lori Chapman's contact information, if you're looking to connect with her, if you're in the North Carolina, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill triangle area, you can find her at companionsforapeacefulpassage.com. You can also search for that on Facebook and you will find her as well. If you're looking to find out more about training because you'd like to be an end-of-life doula, or you are looking for an end-of-life doula to connect with, you can check out the Anelda website. That's anelda.org. Lori mentioned that is where she got her training from, and that is spelled INELDA, anelda.org. Looking on their website, if you're in Duluth, Minnesota, I didn't find anybody around this area at this point in time. You could certainly contact Anelda directly. However, I know of a few folks who are looking to do this work. So if you do have a need, feel absolutely free to contact me via website, email, Facebook page, and I can attempt to bridge that connection for you if it's something that you would like to do, connecting up with somebody who might be doing this work shortly in the future. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, I am excited to be co-hosting a Death Cafe with Sarah Seidelman. And if you're hearing those words and going, what in the world is this Death Cafe thing? It is, you can look at the information on deathcafe.com. But it is basically creating a space to talk about all things death, dying, end of life stuff, living our best life up until then as well. But having these conversations and opening the door to discuss. And I have actually never been to a death cafe, but I've had some great conversations with people that have and who have hosted them. And it is very much guided by the folks that are there and the conversations that people want to have. So Sarah and I will have a few conversation starters if we need them. And some questions that people can throw their two cents in, no pressure to share. But if you would like to, the door is open. So that will be happening on Thursday, January 24th from 3 to 4 p.m. at the Zeitgeist Arts Cafe located at 222 East Superior Street. It's going to be happening on the mezzanine level. So you can go in. You are welcome to order coffee, tea, appetizers at the bar, and then head on up and join us and join the conversation. You can find the event by looking on Facebook and searching Death Cafe Duluth, Minnesota. It should pop up for you. And if you do have any questions at all, do not hesitate to get a hold of me through the website or through Facebook Messenger. If this is something that piques your interest, definitely come on down and join the conversation. You are invited. Thank you again so very much for listening. Check out the rest of the podcast at the podcast website, which is wellnessrenpodcast.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for the email list so we can get you that email each time we put out a podcast each week. Support us by sharing this podcast with anybody who you think might benefit and might enjoy it. Of course, we're an Amazon affiliate, so before you make those Amazon purchases, definitely head over to the wellnessrenpodcast.com website and click on into the support the podcast into any of the Amazon links. Super quick and easy. And of course, as I mentioned in the beginning, the opportunity to become a patron through Patreon to support the podcast is definitely there and appreciated. It's really simple, very similar to using PayPal. And not only do you get a lot of happy gratitude feelings coming from me to you frequently, but you also get to be a part of the community and helping this information keep coming and get out to more people. And we all win by getting more ideas about health and wellness and food and how our brain works and how we can think differently and people and modalities and just what's out there that can support us. Health is so complex and varied, and that is what I love about it, and that's what I love about sharing this information. So thank you for being part of the solution in helping us all figure out how to manage our own health. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to connecting with you in our next episode next week. Until then, take good care of yourself, and may you find more pieces that fit into your health and wellness puzzle. Be well.